Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to start so we have a long program tonight. And I wanted to start talking about Rambam, Rav Moshe ben Maimon. And the reason why we're doing this program is because last night was his yahrzeit. Last night, the 20th of Tevet, was his yahrzeit. And Bezrat Hashem, his soul will have an ilui, will have a, because of this program and all the mitzvot we're doing, we're learning Torah around the Rambam's yahrzeit. And his merit should stand for all of us, Bezrat Hashem, and all of Klal Yisrael. Tremendous merit he has. So who is the Rambam? Rambam was born 1135 in Spain. And Spain in those days was under the Muslims. And we have to realize that the golden age of Spain was just before Rambam. The golden age of Spain ends with Rambam, basically. Rambam's bar mitzvah, he runs away. He runs away from Spain. We'll talk about that. But first of all, where did Rambam learn? How did he learn? And the answer is, his father, Maimon, was his main teacher. His father, Maimon, was Dayan Maimon. He was a Dayan in Spain, Lucena, a place called Lucena, L-U-C-E-N-A. There was a yeshiva there. The Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, who wrote the famous Rif, at the back of the Talmud, you'll find a praise of the Gemara based only on the halakhic works of the Gemara. That was the Rif. The Rif was the rabbi of the Rebbe Migash, Rabbi Yosef ben Migash, Rabbi Yosef ibn Migash, who was the Rosh Hashiva after the Rif, and Rabbi Yosef ibn Migash was the rabbi of Rabbi Maimon. So if you go to Yeshiva today, you'll get the Hiddushei HaRimigash. Hiddushei HaRimigash, very famous, we learned it when I was in Yeshiva, and a very, very deep analysis of the Gemara. He was the rabbi of Rabbi Maimon. And Rabbi Maimon was the rabbi of Rambam, the father and the rabbi of the Rambam. Now Rambam was only 6 when the Rebbe Migash passed away. We're going to see in the movie that he gets a bracha before the Rebbe Migash dies. He gives Rambam a bracha. But he never learned with the Rebbe Migash because he was only 6 years old when the Rebbe Migash passed away. So even though there are legends that the Rebbe Migash taught the Rambam, they're probably just legends. That's what they are, just legends. But it's not true because he was only 6 years old when the Rebbe Migash passed away. So the main teacher of the Rambam was Rabbi Maimon, his father. His father was the main teacher. It was fantastic. Why? Because his teacher's with him all the time. His teacher's available. Can you imagine? And he gets shimush. What's shimush? Shimush is the actual physical experience of being with the great rabbi. He's learning with him. He's living with him. He's studying with him 24 hours a day. Amazing. So as I mentioned, the Almohads, who was a fierce Berber tribe from Morocco, conquered Spain from the previous Muslim rulers. So as you can see, even in those days, the Muslims would get hot and cold. There'd be a time of moderation amongst Islam. And then all of a sudden you get a new group, very fiery group. I don't know where they came from, but they came from the Berbers. They came from the mountains of Morocco. And they conquer Muslim Spain. And they give the Jews a choice, not just the Jews, but Christians as well, all the dhimmis who were protected under Muslim status, a choice of conversion or the sword. So you can imagine, Rambam's family has to run away. 13 years old, his bar mitzvah present was, he has to run away from Spain. Where do they run? They go to Morocco. And in Morocco, again, the same issue. The Moroccan guys are also getting radicalized, and now same thing. They come after the Rambam's family. They're the rabbis. The rabbis, leaders of Spain. We're going to see in the movie, there's a very famous Spanish rabbi who just gave his life, wouldn't convert. They killed him. He died. Rambam's opinion was not to die for the sake of not converting to Islam. He says Islam is not a pagan religion. It's not idolatry. And a Jew can convert to Islam instead of giving his life. And then when he can, run away. And that's what he did. He ran away. Some people say he did convert to Islam. Some people say he didn't. We don't know for sure exactly. But that's his opinion. He writes down in his work called the Geret Hashmad, the letter of conversion. He wrote a letter about conversion, saying that a Jew should not give his life because Islam is not a pagan religion. It's not one of the three cardinal sins you have to give your life for. And if you can pretend to be a Muslim, and we find today there's Jews, Iranian Jews. What are they called? Mashadis. They're from a place called Mashhad in Iran, where all the Jewish community in Iran converted that place, that town, they all converted to Islam. And now you'll find them in Great Neck and Queens, and they're back to the Jews. They're back to Jews. So they converted temporarily because of the pressure, because of the threats. The whole town, can imagine. But they only married amongst themselves. Till today, they very much keep themselves to themselves. Yes?
How do they deal with Shabbat?
Shabbat is Shabbat. They don't do any work. Stay home. You don't have to go to mosque on Shabbat. You go Friday. Friday's a mosque, and then, in fact, it's interesting because they hid their Sefer Torahs in the mosque. The main mosque, they still have Sefer Torahs over there in Mashhad. And they put, where's the safest place in the place so they won't burn the Sefer Torahs? In the mosque. So they put it in the mosque, in the holy mosque. So they have all their old texts are in the holy mosque, still today, probably, still today in Mashhad. Well, that's a different topic. But I'm just giving an example of Jews in Arab lands who converted to Islam and retained their Judaism and came out and they practice Judaism now openly, Baruch Hashem. So that's because of the Rambam. The Rambam's influence of Egeret Hashmad. We're going to talk about that when he talks about the Jews of Yemen as well. He wrote a book, a letter called Egeret Teman to the Jews of Yemen. Well, let's talk a bit about that. So anyway, so what happens? Just a brief introduction. At the age of 13, they forced to flee Cordoba. If you go to Cordoba today, you'll find the statue of the Rambam. That's the place where he lived, okay? From Locina to Cordoba. And the Jews were attacked by rioters, and many synagogues were destroyed, and Moshe and his family traveled from place to place. Eventually, they moved to a place called Fez in Morocco for 5 years. 1165, they moved to Israel. And Israel was it's a very troubled place at that time. Why? Because you had the Crusaders fighting against the Muslims. And any famous rabbi was liable to be captured and held to ransom. And therefore, the Rambam didn't tell anyone who he was. And as soon as he could, he got away from there. And they moved, the family moves now to Cairo, to Egypt. And where Rambam was supported by his father, by his brother, David, a merchant who imported diamonds from India. So here, David, his brother, is his main lifeline. So Rambam was learning, basically, he's in Kollel. He's learning. He learned to be a doctor, but he never practiced medicine. Probably Morocco. He was a great Talmid Chacham. He's writing commentaries on the Mishnah. Imagine, he's writing commentaries on the Mishnah. Unfortunately, most of his works were written in Arabic. Most of his works were in Arabic, including the commentary on the Mishnah, but it was written in Hebrew letters, which is revolutionary. So written in Hebrew letters, Arabic and Hebrew letters. It's called Shara. It's like a mixture of Hebrew and Arabic. And imagine, he wrote a lot of it from memory. Imagine, he memorized the whole Mishnah, writing commentaries from the whole Talmud on a Mishnah from memory. He said, pardon me if you find some mistakes, I wrote this from memory on my travels. He didn't have his books with him. Imagine, he knew everything by heart. He knew the whole Talmud by heart, pretty much. So his brother supported him financially, and then his father, his wife, and two of his sons died within the space of 2 years, starting 1166, probably from plague. 1171, his brother David, his lifeline, drowns when his ship sunks en route to India. So a ship, David, his brother, dies. Without the support of a brother, he says he was, for 1 year, he was depressed in bed. He was sick. Now, his brother went, and when his brother went, he invested all his money with his brother to do business. So Rambam basically was penniless, and now he had to support his brother's family as well, his brother's wife and two children. So now he was totally gone. He said, I was devastated for a whole year. He talks about his sickness. He had boils and all kinds of sicknesses because of his depression. Couldn't move for a year. And finally, he begins to practice medicine and struggles to support himself and his brother's family in his mid-50s already. By then, he wrote most of his works. Most of his major works were written, Baruch Hashem. I'm going to talk about his major works later on. Rambam was appointed as a personal physician by a royal courtier and then to Salah al-Din. Saladin, the great Saladin, the Sultan of the whole Middle East, basically. And he was the Sultan of Egypt and Syria, and he conquered Palestine from the Crusaders. Salah al-Din. Okay. The new appointments and duties gave him financial stability and very limited time to devote to his writings. His one son remained. All his other children died in the plagues. We said his wife, first wife died, his second wife has one son, Abraham. And his son, Abraham, became his faithful student and takes over when Rambam dies. There's very few rabbis who have rabbis taking over. His son was 18 years old when Rambam died. His son becomes the chief rabbi of Egypt, and he also becomes the physician to the Salah al-Din. He's 18 years old, imagine. Must have learned a lot from his father. Rambam passed away on the 20th of Tevet, as we said last night, in the year 1204 CE. 1204 CE, so he lived around 69 years. 69 years old. He died 69 years old. So did my father. So 69 years old. Rambam died, passed away 69 years old. If you go today, I was just there in the summer. You go to Tveria, you will find the kever of Harambam. And next to Harambam's kever is his father's kever, Maimon. Rabbi Maimon, great rabbi who's taught the Rambam. You'll also find Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. You'll find Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi, all the greats in that same area. Great Talmud is in the same area. It's amazing. It's a beautiful area. It's a very, very impressive tomb, the tomb of the Rambam in Tiberia. It's very, very important. But you should go, if you can, to Tiberia and go to the Kever of the Rambam. Anyway, let's talk about his scholarship. So he said at a very young age, he was educated by his father, Maimon, Hadayan, who was the student of the Ribagash, who was the student of the Rif, Rabbi Yitzhak Alfasi, before that. And in his mid-20s, he started writing volumes on the Mishnah, which he completed when he was around 30 years old. His intent was to assist those who could not understand the Mishnah's Hebrew and often cryptic texts. So he'd explain the words and he explained the meaning of the Mishnah very simply. It's not a very long commentary, it's a short commentary. Today it's translated into Hebrew, it's a beautiful commentary. Rambam's commentary on the Mishnah. Okay. And then he wrote Sefer HaMitzvot. Now it's interesting because the Gemara tells us in Makot that there are 613 mitzvot. Where do we learn it from? Torah, Tzivalani, Moshe, Morasha, Kilat Yaakov. Torah, Tzivalani, Moshe, Torah is Gematria 611. And as we learned, 613 commandments. The Torah itself is commanded to us by Moshe. 611, the Gematria of the word Torah is 611, was commanded to us by Moshe. And we got two commandments straight from God. The first two commandments of the Ten Commandments we heard straight from God. Altogether we have 613, right? So Torah is 611, plus two we got straight from Moshe, from God, 613. But the Gemara does not tell us what they are. Big problem. We don't know what the 630 mitzvot are. The Torah, the Talmud says, there are 630 mitzvot. What are they? So Rambam was one of the first people who wrote Sefer HaMitzvot. You go today, you have the library, books of mitzvot, you have the positive commandments, negative commandments, you have 248 positive commandments, 365 negative commandments. We did have a class on a Monday night, going, we went right through all the commandments. Remember that? Went right through all the commandments, took a few years. But he wrote the book on what are the 630 commandments. Imagine, no one knows, no one knew. Rambam wrote down what they are. He quotes you the Pesukim, he tells you his reasoning, why he counted them in. Interesting. So that's the second major work he wrote. Amazing, because without that, we have 630 commandments. What are they? Rambam tells us what they are, otherwise we'd be lost. Well, not all time. Well, that's a different book. He didn't write the reasons in the Sefer HaMitzvot. The reasons he gives is in Moreh Nevuchim, which is the Guide to the Perplexed. Guide to the Perplexed. If you start the Guide to the Perplexed, I guarantee you'll never finish it. You have to know the trick. The trick is to start from the third section. If you start the first section, you'll get so involved with the Greek philosophy and the translations, you'll get so crazy, you'll just stop. Most people just stop in the first section. So the answer is skip the first section. The second section, skip the second section, go to the third section. The third section is where he discusses, we went through it, we had a class here, on the third section of Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim, where he talks about the reasons for mitzvot. And he goes through the reasons for the different mitzvot, and he categorizes the mitzvot, very fascinating. But then he says a general rule, he says, even though I'm giving reasons, don't think the mitzvah doesn't apply if the reason doesn't apply. I'm just hypothesizing. We don't know the real reasons for the mitzvot. We know Hashem does not give things without reasons. Even a hawk has a reason. Trouble is, it's extra rational, super rational. We can't understand the reason. Doesn't mean there's no reason, but there's a reason. And even though I'm giving the reasons don't apply, you still have to do the mitzvah, because maybe the reason's wrong. We don't know the reason for sure. But we know that Hashem does not give us laws with no rhyme and reason. There must be a reason Hashem had. What is his reason? We don't know. We can try to understand the reason. We have a job, a duty to understand the reason. Anyway, that's moving on. That's Moreh Nevuchim, Guide to the Perplexed. And then he wrote a letter about Higer Hashmad, which is a letter about martyrdom. Unfortunately, that was a choice many Jews had to make. Shall I convert? Shall I die by the sword? What shall I do? So he gives us a clear, Baruch Hashem, I tell you, without that, many more Jews would have died when he came and been martyrs. They would have died for no reason, really. Many more Jews would have been killed by the Muslims because many more Jews would have said, I'm not going to convert. No, there's two letters. One is Higer Hashmad and one is Higer Teman. Which is pretty similar, but Egeret Teman had to discuss other issues as well. First he wrote Egeret Hashmad, which came out in Morocco. We're going to see the movie. It came out in Morocco. The Egeret Hashmad was written in Morocco, which that's why some people say he himself converted. He relied on his own letter, his own psak, that you convert, and then he ran away. That's what he says. He says, convert, don't give your life, don't die. It's not worth dying for. It's not one of the three cardinal sins. Islam is not idol worship, Baruch Hashem. You can convert to Islam with a clear conscience, and as soon as you can, run away and become a Jew. Go back to being Jewish, completely. And that's what many Jews did through the centuries. We just talked about Mishadis. So it's still happening till now. Who knows what's going on in Iran and other places around the world and under the Muslims. Maybe there's some Jews there secretly operating as Muslims. We don't know. We don't know what's going on. Maybe in Egypt as well. We don't know what's going on. Okay, so he wrote the Egeret of Shemad, which is a letter of martyrdom. When to give your life, when not to give your life. He wrote a letter to the Yemenite community, which we have to talk about as well, encouraging them to stay Jewish, because they were confounded. Why? Because they're apostates. The biggest troubles we have are Jews who convert, just like the Christians, right? Who was that famous, what's his name, Pablo Cristiani. Pablo Cristiani, who was this disputation with the Ramban, who was one generation later after the Ramban. The Ramban was still in Spain. Ramban ran away from Spain, right? So our biggest problem were these Jewish converts to other religions. In Yemen, they had a very famous Jewish convert converted to Islam and persuades the emperor of Yemen to convert the Jews to Islam. And he's the main source. He's the main protagonist that goes to talk to the rabbis and tries to persuade the Jews to convert. A lot of pressure on the Jews to convert. And a lot of Jews were giving their lives. A lot of Jews converted. They didn't know what to do. They're lost. And they wrote a letter to Rambam in Egypt, and Rambam doesn't just give them practical advice, but he also pulls strings with Salah al-Din to push the emperor of Yemen to go easy on the Jews. Baruch Hashem, he changed the whole situation of Yemen. The Jews of Yemen, amazing. We're going to talk about that. And then he writes other letters, which is gathered together. They have a book called The Response of the Rambam, Per Hador, which just came out recently because they found all the Geniza, right? Solomon Schechter, famous Solomon Schechter, Professor Solomon Schechter, he was a famous guy who went through all the works of the Cairo Geniza. They found the Cairo Geniza. The British went to Cairo and they found all the letters of the Rambam in the Cairo Geniza. Very famous Geniza, Elisha Fishbane. Dr. Fishbane we have here is an expert, one of the experts in the world on that. You know, he wrote a book about it, one part of it. And they found many of the original writings of the Rambam. And you can look in the British Museum, they had it, the Sassoon Foundation had it. Today, the Hebrew Museum in Israel bought it. From the main, you'll see, in his own writing, imagine, you get the Rambam's own writing, the Mishneh Torah, and the Rambam's own writing in Hebrew. One of the only books he wrote in Hebrew is the Mishneh Torah. Let's talk a bit about the Mishneh Torah. What is the Mishneh Torah? So the answer is, if you want to look up Jewish law in the Talmud, you're confounded. There's no index. Jewish law is scattered, higgledy-piggledy, right through the Talmud. You want to look up the laws of Shabbat? Well, you can look at Masechet Shabbat, but not all the laws of Shabbat are in Masechet Shabbat. They're all over the place. They're scattered. The rabbis, whatever they talk, they just went off at tangents. And because of discussion, so the Talmud is basically one long flow chart, which is no flow ready. It's a flow chart here, flow chart there, flow chart there. It goes into different topics all the time. There's no systematic research on one topic in the Talmud. It's all over the place. So now, if you want to look up a law in the Talmud, you have to know exactly where it's going to be. How are you going to know where it is? There's no index. So what Rambam did is, he indexes the whole Talmud in a very, very logical, simple way into 14 books called the Yad HaChazakah. Yad is Gematria 14, because there are 14 bones in the hand, as Dr. Abud used to tell us all the time. Yad is 14, so he called it Yad HaChazakah, the strong hand, or the Mishneh Torah, which is the second Torah, which is really based on the Mishnah. Right, it's a Mishnah. The Mishnah is really meant to be the oral laws from the written law. What he did is he compiled the written and the oral laws in one book in a very logical, systematic fashion. You want to look up the laws of Shabbat, you look at the laws of Shabbat. You want to look up the laws of Tefillah, you look at the laws of Tefillah. You don't have to look in the whole Gemara, Masechet Brachot, to look at the laws of Tefillah, you don't know where they are. Everything's done in logical. So he's the first one we have who systemized Jewish law in simple Hebrew. Beautiful. It's beautiful Hebrew. Thank God he wrote it in Hebrew. All the other books are translated from the Arabic, and therefore you'll find mistakes. Because most of these translations were wrong translations. They were literal translations as opposed to just, what's the other translation? The topic and being translated properly as opposed to literal translations. So you have Ibn Tibbon and others who translated it in a very, the style is missing. So that's the other problem with the books. So today you have other translations. You have a very recent Dayan in Yerushalayim, Yemenite Dayan, Rav Kafach, he translated a lot of the works from the original Arabic. He was an Arabic speaker. So he translated a lot of them into beautiful Hebrew today. So that's probably I don't know. There's many different translations. And then from the Hebrew, they're translating to Greek and English and other languages. Today you can buy Moreno Vochim in English, Bantam books. I don't know what kind of translation that is, but you know, what can you do? But you can get the best translations are done by Mossad Rav Kook in Hebrew, and annotations with commentary, beautiful, very, very, very good work. Till Kapach came along recently. I don't know who published Kapach's work, but they're very, very good as well. Okay, so Mishneh Torah really is a book that opens up halakha to the masses. Before that, you had to go to the rabbi. The rabbi had to know the whole Talmud and pull out the laws from different places in the Talmud. Now the Rambam came along. I want to look up the laws of, say, give me an example, some very laws of mourning. Yeah, he's got Hilchot Avilut. Straight away. Boom, you go. Hilchot Avilut. You want to look up laws of kings. Now, he didn't only write laws which apply today. He wrote laws of all the 613 commandments. Even when the temple is rebuilt, he wrote laws about the temple. He wrote laws about Korbanot, which Shulchan Aruch skips out. Shulchan Aruch came much later, and he skips out. Everything doesn't apply today. So now when Mashiach comes, what are we going to do? How are you going to build the temple? And the answer is, there's only one person who talked about it. There's only one book of law which discusses everything, that's Rambam. That's the greatness of the Rambam. The whole Torah is covered by the Rambam. The whole Torah is covered in simple Hebrew, written for the masses, written for the layman, and very nice, systematic outlay. You can look up everything you want, very easily, tip of your fingers. Rambam made it all accessible and made him famous, world famous. Until today, every yeshiva learns Rambam. In the most Ashkenazi yeshiva, they learn more Rambam. It's interesting. The Briscoe Rav made Rambam famous. That was his main. He focused on Rambam. He was like obsessed with Rambam. There's probably more pages of commentary on Rambam today than maybe on the Talmud even. People were just obsessed on Rambam. Because the Rambam, if you look at Rambam, he doesn't give sources. It's a big problem. Rambam never gave sources. And he was taken to task by one of his major detractors, the Ra'avad, because he doesn't give sources for all his laws. So why does he give the sources? So very simple. If I don't give sources, you can't argue with me. Very simple. You can't argue with me. Plus, he doesn't say who says what. He just quotes. He doesn't say Rava says this. Or why. He doesn't bring down debates. He doesn't say so-and-so says this. He just gives you the bottom line from the Talmud is. So if you learn the Rambam, now you learn the Talmud, you're going to figure out how did Rambam learn the Talmud. That's what they're trying to figure out. How did Rambam learn the Talmud? Well, how do you learn Talmud different from Rashi? How do you learn Talmud different from Tosfos? Anyway, that's for deeper analysis. That's what they do in the Yeshivot. Figure out how the Rambam learned the Talmud. But otherwise, you don't have to figure out what the Rambam learned Talmud. According to Rambam, the whole Talmud is there for the halakha. If you learn Talmud, you don't learn halakha, you're just wasting your time. Because the whole problem, the whole point of the Talmud is to get you to the bottom line. What do you do? What's the practical benefits of what you're learning? What is the outcome of what you're learning? Very important to learn halakha, and that's what Rambam gives you, is the halakha, the bottom line of the Talmud in the Mishneh Torah. Okay, furthermore, he writes an oath for physicians. You can download it today, it's on the web. He writes various medical texts, and he became famous. He was a very famous doctor. Okay, so we talked about a lot of his major works, and I just want to go through some really important stuff he wrote. Okay, so let's talk a bit about his letter about apostasy, Gerut Hashmad. The fanatical Almohads who ruled in Spain and North Africa tolerated no other religions but Islam. Adoption of Islam or expulsion or a martyr's death was the only choices. That's it. Many Jews gave up their personal comfort, property and possessions and fled the region. Some feigned belief in the dominant religion while inwardly remaining loyal Jews and secretly observed all the laws of the Torah. And Rambam writes, he discusses the status of Jewish law on these unfortunate Islamic Maranos, whether or not they're considered apostates and idolaters or not. And he treats the matter of apostasy at length. He discusses what makes one an apostate, under what conditions must one give up one life for one's religion. Does the law differentiate between one who merely pays lip service to the enforced religion while secretly observing all the commandments, and one who is coerced to transgress Torah laws in action? Okay, so basically he says you don't have to give your life for Islam. That's the Igeret Hashmad. Then he writes a letter to the Jews of Yemen, which is even more famous, and it was composed as a result of persecutions of the Jews of Yemen. In response to the query by the rabbi, Yaakov al-Fayumi, who was the rabbi of Yemen at that time, about the year 1168, the Jews of Yemen were confronted with a three-pronged agonizing problem. A fanatical Muslim cleric became the ruler of this distant primitive South Arabian land and decreed his Jewish subjects convert to Islam under the threat of harsh punishment and suffering. Their agony was compounded by a Jewish apostate who embraced Islam and began preaching to the Jewish communities. Then Muhammad was divinely sent prophet. And he brought proofs of the Torah that Muhammad was right. Okay, kept on going. And then the third thing was there was an imposter who claimed to be the Messiah as well. So he had three problems. He had this crazy emperor. He had this this Jew who converted to Islam preaching. And then on top of that, you had a person who's claiming to be the Messiah. Three-pronged attack on the Jews. Tell us, Rabbi, tell us what to do, Rambam. What should we do? So Rambam addressed a letter to the sage and threw it to the entire Jewish population. And he says, a very important idea, he says, what is the roots of anti-Semitism? He says, the root of all anti-Semitism throughout the ages, envy of the Jew being the chosen people and the recipients of God-given Torah. Unable to do battle with the Almighty himself, the haters turn their jealous rage towards this people. Throughout the ages, it's taken three forms. Brute force to exterminate the physical existence of the Jewish people. Persuasion to refute or falsify the teachings of Judaism. And finally, a combination of the two, the false claims of new religions, Christianity and Islam, that Judaism is no longer valid and not relevant, and Jews must be forced to accept a new revelation. Imagine those three results of anti-Semitism, which still apply still today. Either physical destruction, distorting Jewish values, or changing to complete a new religion. He consoled them by telling them Jews are unique and indestructible. Imagine, this is 900 years ago. We're still around. It's a miracle we're still around. Jews are unique and indestructible. All the past and present sufferings and persecutions were foretold by the prophets. And just as in the past the nations had failed to annihilate the Jewish people or destroy the Jewish religion, so will the present persecutions fail, and we are witness that it failed. Baruch Hashem, we're here. And peace and tranquility will return to the community. Okay, so he wrote this whole major work, which really consoled and gave them a little lift, the uplift. Aside from that, he also worked through Salah al-Din to pressure this guy to go easy on the Jews. And the Jews were really so grateful to the Rambam, saving them, that they added the Rambam in the Kaddish. B'chayechom yomechon v'chayede harav Moshe ben Maimon. May the Mashiach come in our lifetime, your lifetime, and the lifetime of Rabbi Moshe ben Maimon. The Jews of Yemen added Rambam, and from that time on, he became their rabbi. So the Jews of Yemen follow Rambam, that's it. They don't follow Shulchan Aruch, they just follow Rambam, which makes it much easier for them. Okay, so Rambam was basically, he had only one son. I just want to go through some highlights, and then we'll go to the movie. In his commentary on the Mishnah, very famous over here, he brings down over here 13 principles of faith. Imagine, prior to Rambam, we didn't have any principle of faith. Judaism is not a religion of dogma, it seems. There's no real big thing about faith. You know, Christianity is all about faith. Judaism is all more about action, right? But Rambam comes along and says, no, every Jew has to believe in 13 principles of faith. And these 30 principles became so famous today, they're in every siddur today. Right? We say, in fact, over here we say it every morning. 30 principles of faith, Ani Mamin, which became part of the song Yigdal. Yigdal Elokim Chai is the 30 principles of faith. Right, in different format. So number one, the existence of God. Number two is the unity of God. Number three is the spirituality and no body. God's eternity above time. God alone should be the subject of worship. God gives revelation through his prophets. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest prophet. The Torah that we have today is the one given to Moshe by God. The Torah given to Moshe will not be replaced. Nothing can be added or removed. God's awareness of all human actions and thoughts. Now number 10. Number 11 is reward of good and punishment of evil. Number 12 is the coming of the Jewish Messiah. And number 13, resurrection of the dead. 13 principles of faith by Rambam, which he gets from the Talmud. He gets everything from the Talmud. So it's interesting because it really caused a lot of problems at the time. A lot of rabbis didn't agree with him. Gave him a hard time. But today, you see, it's totally accepted by everyone today. It's amazing how everything he wrote may be controversial at his time. Imagine, in that time when he wrote that God has no body, he was attacked by the other rabbis. What are you talking about? The Torah says the finger of God, the back of God, the face of God. What are you talking about? You can't limit God to a body. Today, you know, in his time he's radical, but today it makes perfect sense. He's accepted by everyone. One of the most widely referred to sections of the Mishnah Torah is his laws of charity. It goes through the eight levels of charity. Everyone knows about the eight levels of charity. So the highest level of charity is give an interest-free loan or find someone a job. That's the highest level of charity. Can you imagine? Finding someone a job is the highest level of charity. Can you imagine? It's not really charity. Why? Because the person feels he doesn't owe you a favor. That's the highest level of charity. When he doesn't owe you a favor, it's the highest level of charity. That's the best level of charity. Giving a person anonymously to an unknown recipient. via someone else, third party, who, so therefore you don't know who you're giving to, he doesn't know who he's getting from. Giving tzedakah anonymously to a known recipient, he doesn't know who's giving to him, but you know who you're giving to. Giving tzedakah publicly to an unknown recipient, giving tzedakah before being asked, giving adequately after being asked, giving willingly but inadequately, giving in sadness out of duty. So there's 4 levels of tzedakah. And one of the other philosophical things he talks about is the existence of evil. How does a Jew reconcile the existence of evil with God being good? So he says, evil does not come from God, evil mainly comes from man. But there's a natural kind of evil, which is nature, but it's not. There's no evil in God. Evil is just an absence of light. God is all light. When there's a withdrawal of the light, then this place comes evil. But it's not God made. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit more. Any questions?